From Maine Public Radio and MainePublic.org, I'm Nora Flaherty with the news on this day in Maine, Thursday, May 21st, 2020.
This Day in Maine is made possible by listener support and by Modern Pest Services, committed to taking an intelligent approach to pest control. Learn more at modernpest.com. And by New England Rehabilitation Hospital of Portland, helping patients and their families after illness or injury. Learn more at nerhp.org.
The Maine CDC is reporting today an increase of 58 cases of COVID-19 since yesterday. That's now 1,877 confirmed and probable cases in Maine. For the second day, the number of deaths has not increased. It remains at 73. The state has received federal funding worth nearly $53 million from the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention to bolster its response to COVID-19 and other infectious diseases. Department of Health and Human Services Commissioner Jean Lambrew says the money will help expand capacity at the state's health and environmental testing lab and at multiple testing sites.
This includes expanding physical space and increasing staffing to accelerate the number of testing options it has. In the long term, the state intends to accelerate the construction of its new lab in Augusta, which broke ground prior to COVID-19.
Lambrew says the state will also use the money to expand lab capacity at rural hospitals so they can respond to infectious disease outbreaks and to increase the number of testing sites outside of healthcare office settings. And more than 25,000 businesses in Maine have been approved to receive more than $2 billion in loans from the Federal Paycheck Protection Program. A recent national survey from the National Federation for Independent Business found about 80% of respondents applied for the program, and many got their funds over the past month. David Clow, the Maine State Director for the NFIB, says the program has helped to keep businesses afloat and employees on the payroll as sales have fallen because of the pandemic. But Clow says some businesses would like additional flexibility in how they can spend the money.
Then there's also the matter that when Congress passed this, they did not envision that state shutdowns would go on for as long as they have, nor that the restart of the economy would be as gradual as it's going to be. So that may need revisiting.
Some federal lawmakers have said they are hoping to revisit the program in the future. Looking at the weather tonight, we'll have clouds increasing in the north, otherwise clear skies with lows in the high 30s and 40s. Tomorrow, partly sunny in the north, otherwise very sunny with highs in the mid-60s to the low 80s. Saturday, mostly sunny north, mostly cloudy south with highs in the high 50s to low 70s. And on Sunday, partly to mostly sunny with highs in the low 60s to the low 70s. As Maine heads towards stage two of the state's plan to reopen the economy during the coronavirus pandemic, the Mills administration has issued guidance for summer camps. For some camps, this has provided the make-or-break decision about whether to open this summer. And as part of our deep-dive coronavirus coverage, Patty White reports that those who have decided to move forward are preparing for a very different experience.
The guidance issued by the Mills administration on Wednesday was a sort of reckoning for Matt Pines, co-owner of Maine Teen Camp. It's a sleepaway camp in Porter that draws kids from across the U.S. and the globe. For weeks, Pines has been wrestling over what to do this summer. After he read through the state's requirements, he made the tough decision not to open and notified campers.
We knew we would, but we broke their hearts when we told them that they couldn't be together this summer.
The guidance issued by the state requires a 14-day quarantine for out-of-state campers before they arrive and prohibits international campers. Activities that involve physical contact are discouraged, as are singing and yelling, because they increase the spread of respiratory droplets. Pine says when he looked at all the changes Maine Teen Camp would have to make, he came to a disappointing conclusion.
If we implement that, that's not going to look like camp for us. It would be such a different experience.
The changed experience, combined with the challenge of potentially managing campers who become sick from the coronavirus, was a deal breaker. But other camps will open, even though, as Laura Ordway of Winona Camps in Bridgeton says, everything will be different.
Everything about the physical aspect of camp how the day is run, how meals are served, how activities move forward, all of those items are changed. It's as if we are building a camp from scratch with simply just the outline of the camp that we have had before.
Winona Camps is dropping one of its two sessions and reducing its numbers from 325 people to 200. Camp will be divided into groups that avoid direct contact, and then those groups will be narrowed into pods.
And so those tent pods will be made up of three or four tents, so no more than 15 or 18 people in a pod, which makes up the equivalent of what we would call a household.
Group size was one of the major hurdles that camps faced for the summer because the state's reopening plan limits gatherings to no more than 50 people from June through August. But the guidance for camps provides a workaround because it allows these so-called household groups that stick together and avoid direct contact with others.
The kids that are going to those camps are essentially going to be in a bubble.
Ron Hall is the executive director of Maine Summer Camps, which represents 147 camps. He says the guidance issued by the state wasn't a surprise because it was developed with input from his organization, but it still doesn't work for everyone.
I would say about a third of the camps right now have decided not to open.
The decision sometimes boils down to the nature of their setup. Tom Doherty runs the Camp Catch a Day Camp in Scarborough.
We have a lot of outdoor space. We have 107 acres, so we can keep kids spread apart.
Camp Ketcha also has multiple buildings, which will make it easier to group kids together. Some programs are canceled, like horseback riding and a preschool camp. And Doherty says campers may have to forgo some traditions, like singing songs at the end of the day because of the potential spread of respiratory droplets. But he thinks the essence of the experience will still be meaningful.
No one sends their kid to camp to learn to shoot an arrow. That's really not. I mean, you go to camp to learn to be a friend.
And he says parents are clamoring for it.
Parents have been clear with me that they want camp for their kids. Their kids are in the house, and they're worried about their development.
Even though he won't open, Matt Pines of Maine Teen Camp is rooting for those that do. A successful experience this season, he says, will pave the way for all camps to reopen next summer. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Patty White.
About 60% of the potatoes produced in Maine and around the country are grown to supply the food service industries. But with everything from school cafeterias to sports concessions to in-flight meals canceled, potato farmers are facing uncertain times in what's already an uncertain business. And many say they are discouraged by what they're being offered by the USDA in a federal aid package. Jennifer Mitchell recently visited Aroostook County with masks and a boom pole to see how farmers are coping.
Hi, we're taking all the precautions.
That's
as
fine.
We are.
Oh, you've got a lot of cameras there.
If you've ever flown on JetBlue and eaten some of the airline's signature blue potato chips as a snack, then you've eaten a potato grown by Dominic LaJoy.
Well, a third of our business is for the blue chips.
That's a sizable chunk for the 1,300-acre family farm in Van Buren, just a short paddle over the river from Canada. LaJoy is vice president of the National Potato Council, and he belongs to the fourth of five generations to farm the same acreage in the St. John Valley.
Most of the crop was shoveled by hand. It was picked by hand. It was shoveled by hand through the winter.
The front of the business is a reminder of that heritage. Old forks and barrels used by LaJoy's grandparents are on display. We're not allowed to enter the modern workings of the plant at this time due to concerns over health and safety. But from the outside, you can see seed potatoes rumbling down a conveyor belt into the waiting trucks below. And while the airline market may be in trouble, LaJoy has been careful not to put all his potatoes in one basket. The business is spread among the processed, fresh produce and the seed markets, which he says may buffer him from some of the financial hits that many other farms are taking.
Growers tend to stick with one sector of the industry and base their operation in the farm on that sector. And so if you're not diverse and don't have options, it's going to be a struggle.
And then there's the timing issue. Potato growers like LaJoy hammer out sales contracts each spring with buyers such as chip and fry makers, grocery stores, and so on. Then, based on the buyer's orders, the farmer plans what varieties and how much to grow with payment on delivery. But right now, LaJoy says those buyers aren't buying.
We base our budget on receiving income based on these contracts, and the timeline has changed. So, obviously, if you're running a business on borrowed money, which what mostly small businesses do, and your income time frame changes, then you're going to pay more interest on that money you borrow. So you lose on that side as well.
About an hour and a half down Route 1 in Holton, Erica Fitzpatrick Peabody, who grows mostly for the processing market, is both thanking and cursing the Maine weather for bringing spring snows to the county as recently as mid-May.
Go to a different farm, different soil type, see if that's more fit.
On the one hand, that snow has made the soil mushy and cold and delayed planting for the 2020 crop, which must go in despite the financial upheavals affecting the 2019 crop. But it's also helping in its own way. When May arrived, Fitzpatrick Peabody realized she was facing a 6 million pound pile of unsold potatoes in her storage shed that shouldn't have been there.
It's still there, and it's likely to be there for a bit. So we took our loader, and we filled this area full of snow. We're not going to give up. We're not going to sit here and wait for a miracle. There's things we can do to extend the shelf life of those potatoes.
Fitzpatrick Peabody says the snow-cooled spuds will survive until the cooling equipment she's been obliged to order, another unexpected cost, can arrive. She's also using products to prevent the potatoes from sprouting, but the longer they sit, the bigger her losses will be. She's already planning to reduce new acreage this season by about 10%.
You know, we don't know the impact rate yet. It's going to take a while.
Don Flannery, executive director of the Maine Potato Board, says it's so hard to predict the final losses because no one knows what the market will do, whether food service will rebound fast enough, whether events will go forward, or whether further outbreaks of COVID-19 will cause more upheaval.
We know already that in most cases, they're not going to open up and have full capacity in these restaurants, or people are going to show up at the numbers they were. So we know it's going to be a slower uphill trudge to get back up to where the volume we were at.
Another question yet to be answered, says Flannery, is whether potato growers will feel much positive impact from federal relief measures. So far, Congress has approved a buyout program through which the USDA would purchase $3 billion in various surplus meat, dairy, and crops for a food box program. About $461 million of that is set aside for fresh fruits and vegetables. Then there are the direct payouts to farmers, which growers have been waiting for. Farmers can apply for this part of the aid starting on May 26th until August 28th. For that program, the USDA is allocating $2.1 billion for what it terms specialty crops. That includes potatoes, along with most all other produce you'd find at the store. Under this section of the aid plan, potato farmers nationwide will be offered 1 penny per pound of product that sat in storage from mid-January to mid-April.
Is that going to be less than what the contracted price is?
Oh, gracious, yeah. You know, across the board, when we looked at the economic impact to growers, the farm gate loss to growers, we based it on a $10 price.
But the relief payment amounts to $1 per hundredweight, which Flannery says is not nearly enough to make an impact for growers who may have lost much of their income for the year. He predicts that Maine farmers could be left with more than 100 million hundredweight of unsold spuds. And he's worried that with virtually every crop nationwide, from avocados to zucchini, all clamoring for the same $2 billion, any payout is likely to be thinner than a kettle-cooked potato chip.
Farm south of town. You probably drove right
back by. In Van Buren, Dominic LaJoyce says the industry was already facing down fickle weather, blights, and low-carb diets before coronavirus came along. And with the average age of a farmer in the U.S. now standing at 58, LaJoyce says he's also worried about the future.
Is this going to entice younger generations to step in? Not when times are like this. You know, there's got to be more stability and more financial stability for young people to really want to step in and do this kind of work.
For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Jennifer Mitchell.
Governor Janet Mills says she has taken steps to curtail state expenditures through June to get through the remainder of the budget year. But the economic impact of the pandemic will also require plans to deal with hundreds of millions of dollars in lost state revenues in the coming year. Mal Leary has more.
Mills says she's been working through the National Governors Association and the state's congressional delegation to urge passage of additional federal aid to states and municipalities and for more flexibility in how federal funds appropriated under the CARES Act may be used. She says without additional assistance from Washington, state and local governments will be forced to lay off workers and cut services.
It's going to mean a lot to people. It's going to mean a lot to people with jobs in the education system, in the higher eds, in the towns and cities and counties, and in the private sector, which we're already seeing.
In a letter to the state's congressional delegation, Mills cites the public and private sector impacts caused by steps to curb the spread of the coronavirus. By one estimate, the projected losses add up to over $3 billion. Mills says the state has the cash to get through the final 5 weeks of the budget year because of cost-cutting steps she ordered a few months ago.
Keeping a close eye on expenditures and revenues and paring back on hiring and contracts and expenditures of all sorts.
But Mills says the current CARES Act provisions must be changed to give the states more flexibility in how they spend the money they've already received. Maine's share is $1.25 billion, but there are limits on how it can be used and on the window for using it.
The impact on the state's budget and other budgets, including local budgets, is going to be well beyond December of this year. And right now, the CARES Act Relief Fund says you have this money, you can only spend it for COVID-19 related expenses, and we've tried to document as many of those as possible, but you can also only spend it from March 1 till December of this year.
Mills says the same kind of flexibility also should be built into any additional aid proposals, and depending on what's passed, she says it may require a special session of the legislature to allocate any new money.
Every one of the governors wants some provision like that to pass so that we know what we're dealing with. At that point, yes, it may be perfectly appropriate to talk to Appropriations Committee, talk to legislators about what should happen with that money.
Some Republican leaders say those discussions should already be happening. State Senator Jeff Timberlake of Turner says the Mills administration has not shared its plans and should be working with both sides of the aisle on solutions.
The Appropriations Committee may be brought back in to have some discussion. You know, we look forward to working with anybody in a bipartisan way, any way we can, to move the state of Maine forward.
The U.S. House, meanwhile, has passed one bill that would provide nearly $1 trillion in aid to states and municipalities. And the Senate is considering several bipartisan measures that would provide nearly $500 billion. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Mal Leary.
And you are listening to Maine Public Radio. Much of the aid that Congress has made available to Americans in financial hardship because of the COVID-19 pandemic has come in the form of a vastly expanded unemployment insurance, or UI, program. UI started during the New Deal, and it hasn't changed much since then. But under the Federal CARES Act and its Pandemic Unemployment Assistance Program, or PUA, UI also now covers independent contractors, people who've been temporarily furloughed as a result of COVID-19, and those who are quarantined but expect to return to work. Organizations that advocate for poor people and workers say these benefits should have already been in place because America's workforce is now made up of many more low-wage, part-time, or self-employed people. As part of our Deep Dive Coronavirus series, I spoke with Matt Schlobohm, the executive director of the Maine AFL-CIO, about what the COVID-19 crisis is revealing about the unemployment insurance system and how he'd like to see it change.
This federal program that has been put in place has helped a lot of people gain access to unemployment insurance, but it begs the fundamental question, why do we need an emergency program for huge numbers of workers in Maine and around the country to have access to unemployment insurance. We should not have to have a special PUA program so that the Uber or Lyft driver or the hairdresser or the logger or the lobsterman or the genuine independent contractor can access unemployment insurance. They should have a right to that program. They should have the ability, if they get laid off through no fault of their own, to get benefits like anyone else.
Here in Maine, coming into this pandemic, what does or what did our unemployment insurance system look like?
I think it's fair to say the system was deeply neglected during the LePage era, and there was an ideological hostility to having a system that provided workers economic security. So you saw the governor directly try to influence unemployment insurance hearing officers and shape the outcomes of the unemployment cases they were deciding on. And you saw unfilled positions, short staffing, a decline in administrative funding. So it is fair to say that we went into this pandemic and this new administration with a system that had been deeply neglected and that had been undermined with an ideological hostility to providing economic security to workers for 8 years of a Governor LePage administration. I would say the current Department of Labor has been working to pre-pandemic to revitalize the system, to make it more responsive to people, and to have it be more functional. But those underlying issues have come home to roost in this moment and have created a perfect storm where we see record levels of people applying and we see deep problems with short staffing and technological glitches and difficulty of the system to respond in the way it needs to.
The PUA program and the other changes to unemployment insurance right now are temporary. They are set to expire at some point. After this is over, what specifically needs to happen from your perspective?
Yeah, a number of important things need to happen at both the state and federal level because this is a joint federal-state program. And I think the first is we have to look at this whole issue of the recipiency rate. We have to look at why is it that 3 out of 4 laid-off workers in Maine typically do not get unemployment insurance when they're laid off. We have to look at whether we have a system that is covering the workforce of today. And the answer is we do not. So we have to modernize and upgrade this system. We think many more workers should be eligible. We think we need to adapt the system so that low-wage workers have just as much ease gaining benefits as higher-wage workers. Part-time workers and seasonal workers and gig workers should have access to unemployment insurance benefits. We need to provide meaningful administrative funding, which requires a congressional fix. That has been chipped away at for years. So we need the federal government to act to modernize this program, and then we need the state to act on the pieces of it the state has control over to modernize and upgrade them so many more workers qualify. We have stronger benefits. We have more generous benefits. It's much easier to apply, and it gives people that security and faith that if I get laid off, I'm going to access unemployment benefits.
Matt Schlobohm is the executive director of the Maine AFL-CIO. Matt, thanks so much.
My pleasure. Great to be with you.
And you can find all the stories in our Deep Dive Coronavirus series online at mainepublic.org. And that's today's Maine News. For more stories, visit mainepublic.org. I'm Nora Flaherty.